Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. We've got another great coming together today of the FDH Lounge and Sportsology. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with good friend, Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen. We are breaking down the Stanley Cup Final for you in the year 2013. Russ, how you doing, my friend?
Good, Rick. How are you?
Oh, fine, thanks. Really looking forward to this series and looking forward to seeing it get underway. I know you're going to be covering the games in person up in Boston, and you're also going to have Sportsology coverage live from Chicago as well. So it's going to be very exciting to follow what you guys are doing all throughout this thing.
Yeah, we'll have people. Rob Bertrand is our reporter in Chicago, so we'll have people in both places. Rob covered the Hawks in 2010 as well, so real familiar, and it'll be great. It's great time of the year. I know you're probably a little sad that your team's out of it, but you know your team gave the Hawks a little bit of doubt, which is about the only team that's given the Hawks a little bit of doubt all year, if you think about it. So you have to be proud of your team.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's pretty funny because they were one of the last five teams left standing and one of the last five champions in the league, if you look at it that way, because that was the last conference semifinal series to wrap up. So that was actually where I wanted to start with you, get your thoughts on some of the different kind of interesting media angles, if you will, because you got those last five teams, of course, and that gives you two of the last four champions here at this point, with Chicago winning it in 2010 and Boston winning in 2011. You got them in the finals. So you got a little bit of a continuity that we've seen in recent years, I think, with the NFL and MLB. The NBA, of course, always overdoes the continuity and the dynasty stuff. But to me, it's kind of refreshing because I go back to, again, my Red Wings, Colorado, New Jersey, Dallas. To me, that was a great era when you had a number of teams that were consistently up there year in and year out, and you could kind of mix and match it sometimes in the finals with two of those four teams. Are you getting kind of the same vibe right now? And if so, how cool is that?
That's very cool. I am getting that vibe. I've heard some interesting stats. The first one made me feel old, and I put an article up on Sportsology about it, and that was this is the first time since 79 that the two original six teams have matched up in the Cup, and I watched the 79 one intently because the Rangers were playing the Habs, and I was watching on my little black and white TV in New York because nobody in my house really cared. My brother was away at college, so I couldn't get any color TV time on that. So I had to watch it in my little lair. But remember it fondly, even though I knew the Habs were going to win that easy, but I was still hoping the Rangers would win. So that's one thing. Then you have – this will, no matter what, be the 10th Cup win for some original six team, and that's 10 since the expansion. So the 72 expansion. Or 72. So that's another thing. So – there haven't been that many. You know, back if you go back in the original six days and you look, there used to be – that's all there were, right? I mean, everybody was the original six team. They were winning, and then they expanded once and they expanded again, and then all of a sudden original six teams couldn't even get in it. So I think it's sort of an amazing thing that that's happening. So that's kind of cool. I think these are just two great markets with great stories. I think – you know, obviously Boston, I wrote in my article that not only as a hockey reporter, but just as an American, I'll feel really good about being in that building because of all the emotion and everything that's gone on in that city. So I feel that that's a great positive for them. I still couldn't pick them to win in the end, but I would feel great if they won. I would, because of everything that they have been through, and they have a lot of great guys on the team, but and I still think Chicago, you know, gets the nod for me. But and I gave them the preseason nod, so I wasn't going to change. I was just wrong about Pittsburgh not being in there, but, you know, as we saw, Pittsburgh couldn't even buy a goal at the end, so that was pretty bad. other than that, I also think you'll be seeing a lot of old original six star power. You will see Bobby Orr. You'll see Stan Mikita. You probably see Phil Esposito. You'll probably see Milt Schmidt, which I got to look it up. I mean, Milt was at the last Cup, and I know he just got moved into a home. I hope he can make it. He is 95.
Wow.
Milt Schmidt is 95 years old. I don't know if he'll make the game or not. I think it'd be amazing if he were there, but he was at the last Cup for Boston, so he made an appearance, and I'm sure Busick will be there. And so we're going to see some really big names for both sides. I'm sure we'll see Bobby Hull, and that makes it fun too. So I think all of that, you put all that in there, and then the product on the ice is going to be real good too. I noticed a tale of the tape, which I thought was pretty good, and it just shows how the game has changed. Let me find it. It was the height and weight for both teams, and let's see. Chicago,
I know what you're looking for. I know they're pretty close aside from Chara. It's very interesting because people think Boston's bigger and badder because of the physicality, but
wait till you hear how close.
The numbers are similar. Yeah.
Boston's on the downside of it, by the way. Chicago is 6'1", 203. Boston's 6'1", 202.
Wow.
But here's the funny thing. I think even the Rangers are right in that range too, but the difference is the speed factor. You saw like a team like the Rangers were just, some of their bigger guys were just too slow, whereas Chicago, even their big guys are fast. So even though we're seeing bigger players here, they're still faster. And I think that's what's really important to point out. It's not like the league's just bigger. We saw the league get bigger before in the early 2000s and everything else. And then after the first lockout, we saw that speed sort of took over when the game opened up. But now size is back because they're big and fast.
Well, that's really kind of the best of both worlds then as far as the game goes, because it allows it to be well-rounded in all of those ways. And everything you said about the original six stuff, to me, is insanely cool because, again, like you, I'm a fan of an original six team. It means a lot to me. It's very interesting as well.
Well, next year, we'll see Detroit and New York get closer again, like they were in the old days, which was fun.
That would be insane if it was the Red Wings and the Rangers. That to me, for whatever reason, would be unbelievable.
It could happen now with the crossover and everything else. You know, I believe that could happen next year.
It's
not going to happen next year, but I mean, it could happen in the future is what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, that would be insane to have an original six final that my team, the Wings, could be involved in. The funny thing is, one team we haven't mentioned, there's another team that, of course, was in the Stanley Cup final for the last time playing an original six team. That, of course, being Toronto, the last time they won it in 67 against Montreal. So, very interesting how that went, and that the Red Wings, since 79, for all the times they've been in the final, have not played any original six teams. So it's really
And the Rangers won in 94, so yeah, they were one.
Exactly, and didn't play an original six team. They played Vancouver.
Nope.
So we've had a couple of instances, and the Rangers have been pretty close to the final a couple times additionally. So it's kind of odd we haven't seen this since 79. We haven't seen this between the cities of Boston and Chicago since 1918, Red Sox Cubs. So, I mean, that in and of itself is huge, having two iconic sports cities like that going at it. I got to ask you,
two of the
too,
best.
There's
no question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they may not stir such warm feelings among some of us from other cities. But,
well,
you got
to put that aside, though. You have to give them their credit. We as fans, you learn to hate certain markets because of their excellence or because of their arrogance. Or, as an example, the Jet fan in me hates the Patriots, but I have to give a nod to them. They're the most successful football team in the last decade, so I'd be a fool to not recognize that. So, you know, we understand that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Very well said. As far as it goes, though, you know, when you talk about the heritage involved in an original six final, is this something where, and again, I realize that the second best thing for Canada is a distant number two, but with there not being a Canadian team in here, much less not a Canadian original six team, but aside from that, Canada's the hockey heritage capital of the world. If you're not going to have a Canadian team represented, is this about as good as it could get for up in Canada there, for as much as they love the game, for as much as they cherish the history?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other one that we can name that would be better would be like the 1950 rematch of the Red Wings Rangers, because Detroit is real close to Windsor, and so that would probably do better. But that's it. I mean,
sure.
This one is going to break. I think this one will break all the records. It might even break the 94 record simply because there's more people in the world. But I think this one, like, I don't know if you saw the Boston, the clincher game was up 73% from their clincher game the last time. So that's quite a jump.
Yeah, that is absolutely insane. And you get into the participants in the series, and again, so much continuity. But of course, the big exception to that is in net for Boston, with Tuukka Rask in there for Tim Thomas this year. Again, we tend to forget on this. We tend to blank on this. But the year before Boston won the Cup, Rask had taken the job away from Thomas. So not his first go-around, and he's done very well previously. And again, losing the job back to Tim Thomas, no shame in that.
He went on to have a couple of amazing years. I mean, literally the best goalie in hockey for those years. They couldn't make a change back. I do want to give out the one fun thing, too, about that 1950 Cup Finals. I don't know if you are aware, but there were games played in Canada for that 19, even though it was Rangers-Detroit. Did you know that?
I did not. Did Windsor come into play? Was that like an alternate site?
No, the Rangers had the circus in Madison Square Garden and decided that they would play their games in Toronto. So Toronto was the Rangers' home rink for a couple of those games, for two of those games, which is crazy. And it would never happen nowadays, but it happened then.
And, of course, the irony is that the permanent circus took up residence years later in the form of Jim Dolan, but that's another story for another day. No, I hadn't known that. That's a very interesting sidelight to this as well. When you're getting into the matchups here, the teams, you indicated giving the nod to Chicago. And again, I have no rooting interest in this one either way. I'm anti-Hawk as a Red Wings fan. Rooted for Boston purely because they were going up against Pittsburgh. But, I'm sort of now more in the thing of, rooting for a blimp to hit the ice and take them both out. So I'm unbiased here. But I'll tell you, I'm saying Boston in six because I just – This defense has just been so out of this world that they've been doing. Pittsburgh was totally taken out of their game, such that don't even know. And this might sound odd to say, but I mean, I don't even know you could say that definitively the better team won. Like if you played it like 100 times, this almost seems like an anomaly of what would happen like 3 times out of 100. Does that even make sense to you?
Dominant. It does make sense because I don't think Pittsburgh would stay off the board another couple of games. Pittsburgh's defense certainly wasn't great. We knew that, but they certainly scored so many goals during the season and even last year in the playoffs against Philly. They had all these high-scoring games that I was covering that you had to think that might come back into play, but it just didn't. So that was a little odd. Look, you give the goaltending nod to Boston, even though Corey Crawford is much improved and has had a really good run here. I give Boston the goaltending nod. I don't think I give Boston the defensive nod, though. I think Chicago had the only bump that they really had, like I said, was against the Red Wings. And I think the Red Wings, because they have a couple of Hall of Famers on that team, they were playing at their peak. Like, you've never seen Datsyuk play. I mean, he rolled it back like 3 years with that kind of play. He was the best player in the playoffs until they were out. So I think they gave them all they can handle as a result, but they got past that. I think the Hawks' defense is vastly underrated. I think Crawford's good enough. But I also think the real matchup here, and I think this is where the power play will come in, which even though Chicago's power play had sputtered a little at times, Boston's is terrible. So Chicago definitely gets the nod on the power play. I might give them equal on PK, but I might give Chicago the nod simply because they have a few more weapons. Bergeron's a great weapon, but Chicago has a little bit more. But here's the thing. With Chicago, Andrew Shaw Brad Marchand, who's going to draw more penalties, who is going to get under the other team's skin more. These two are two of the best at it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very underrated matchup. You're absolutely right about that. I've seen that that opinion in other quarters, but it's still a minority one as far as Chicago having the better defense. But, again, you know, if you look at the principles that they have there, you know, you could certainly make a case for it any time that you've got a past Norris Trophy winner there in Duncan Keith.
I mean,
you
saw
can,
the
you
difference
always...
when Keith was back in that game as opposed to being out. It was a big difference.
Yeah, it was like night and day. But I just look at it again where – And again, this may just be the anomaly working here, and maybe the layoff for Boston after the series. Maybe this will wear off a little bit. But I mean, the way I look at it, they completely manhandled, dominated Pittsburgh. Chicago played very well and won a narrower than it looked 5-game series against LA. In other words, they did not come close to manhandling LA the way that Boston did Pittsburgh, and not even that the scores were out of whack in the Boston
LA,
Pittsburgh.
They were the defending champs.
Okay. All right. So you're saying that basically on strength of opposition, LA being the defending champions, Well, that's all right. Yeah, that's an interesting counterpoint. You mentioned what happened with Chicago against the Red Wings. The one thing that these teams have in common, whoever wins this thing will have come back from really the brink of death because Boston with the infamous comeback against Toronto, Chicago with what happened against the Red Wings. I look at that again, and I've been very gratified as a Wings fan to see that there have been no accusations of choking in that series. And I'll tell you why. What it reminded me of as an Indians fan, the 07 American League Championship Series. Indians were up 3-1 on the Red Sox, lost it. I said at the time they didn't choke, and I feel like maybe people understand that point a little better now looking at this series. If you basically have no business even being up 3-1, and basically everything snaps back to the expected way, and when the momentum turns and the better team gets the upper hand, you're not going to be able to roll it back. I mean, it really wasn't
simple. Well, I think that's what
that.
You're
going to
see in the NBA Finals. I think the Spurs, as an older team, got that first game in. That sort of woke up Miami. Now I'd be surprised if the Spurs even win another game. I'm not an NBA expert, but I'm just saying it wouldn't shock me.
Well, yeah, the pessimist in me fears that you're right about that. I had said Miami in 6 going in, and yeah, it may not even take them 6 from what you saw in game 5 or game 2. Another parallel as well here, and it would be poor taste for me to try to get into measuring, you know, tragedy for tragedy here. But I get that sense. You mentioned it before about Boston, the Boston strong run. It wasn't enough in 0-1, but the Yankees were kind of powered by the same thing coming out of 9-11, at least in terms of atmosphere in the building. It sounds like you're expecting a lot of the same carryover emotion that we saw
no
in the 0-1 World Series.
Emotion will be there, but as you saw for Chicago's last game, emotion amazingly high in that big building during the anthem as usual. So I don't think either one's going to get the edge for emotion. I think that's sort of just going to blank out. I don't think that's going to matter. I put up a picture up on Sportsology and it sort of joggled my mind. There's a picture of Jonathan Toews in the crease lifting his stick, Michael Layton on his stomach, and Patrick Kane lifting his stick with that game-winning goal against the Flyers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that goal that he scored to get the hat trick the other night to get the game winner, that was the same play. Except
that's
this time
it.
You knew the goal went in. I mean, that was the only difference is the last one against the Flyers, you weren't 100% sure. You needed to see the replay, but in this one you were 100% sure. But they do that play a lot. And I just think as good as Boston is, they don't have a combination like that. And if that combination is now – you know, up to speed, it's awakened, whatever you want to use, that's a deadly combination.
The thing that's interesting about Boston when we talk about this, and again, yeah, I mean, if they win, again, it will be without that kind of high-end firepower that we really expect a Stanley Cup champion to have. Doesn't always have, but we tend to expect that. And yet, it's interesting because when you look at the mountaintop here, you got guys on either side of it that I'm looking at here. Jaromir Jagr, still putting up numbers better than, what, 85, 90% of the league with what he went out there and did this year. But he's not the Jaromir Jagr that we remember from back in the day versus a guy that I know that you know a lot about from having covered the draft year in and year out, Tyler Seguin here for Boston. Eventually, he may be that guy at the mountaintop here and leading Boston's offensive attack and powering it, but he's not there yet, Russ.
Right. No, he's not. But he's a fairly young guy. I mean,
sure.
You know, and Jagr, while he still can possess the puck, is certainly not scoring at a clip where you would fear him like you did before either. He still moves it around. He still controls it with his body. He does those things to sort of open it up a little bit, but he's not piling on the points. I mean, I'll look up Jaromir Jagr now, but, you know, it's not a stunning performance or even close to it. But again, he's 41. Like, at this point, I'm not sure what I would even expect from a 41-year-old guy in the playoffs. It is what it is. I mean, I think a 41-year-old guy years ago would have done better, and he still has 9 points in 11 games. So it's still really good. 2 goals, though. And that's where, that's the difference. He's not getting goals. So, and that's what I would fear more from Jagr is the actual goals rather than him setting somebody up.
Well, that's true. That's a very good point. His numbers in the regular season, 35 points in 45 games, 16 of those 35 points coming as goals. Only -2, which really kind of sets him apart from some of the forwards here, because, again, you look at the hallmark of this Bruin team, the strong defense, not only confined to the blue line, but Marchand +23, Bergeron +24, Seguin +23. So, again, they really bring it. But that's the same thing with the Blackhawks, too, to their credit. When you're looking at the plus-minus, their Taves +28, Hossa +20. You've got Bickle +12, even Kane +11. So you've got a pretty good defensive conscience, really, on both sides here, as you pointed out, not just Boston.
Well, and let's talk about Kane for a minute. I did talk about him in my article because, you know, I've watched this guy since he was with the London Knights. I've watched him for a very long time. I watched him win the Stanley Cup with a goal against the Flyers. And that hat trick that he scored in the conference finals, that was the first time anybody scored a hat trick in the conference finals in a deciding game since Wayne Gretzky.
Wow.
So that's a pretty big deal. I mean, again, it is a limited stat, right, because it is in a deciding game and conference finals. But when we always want to talk about greatness after the fact, we'll always point to something like that, saying, well, see what Gretzky did there? And so we have to give Patrick Kane credit for being this clutch scorer because, you know, I'm pointing out a couple of good instances for you now where he's won big games, big series. There's a reason. So not saying Boston doesn't have clutch guys because they do. Krejci is a guy that could kill you that way. Lucic, if he gets in front of the net, he could bang a few in any game. But I'm just saying, sometimes I look at combinations. When you listen to coaches, and I was listening to, forget which coach it was, maybe the Sharks coach, and they were talking about changing lines. He was like, well, I'm not going to do full line changes, but I'm going to look at the combinations that are working, meaning the two guys that are working. That's a hell of a combination to have in the Stanley Cup. Not saying that, you know, Crosby, Malkin or anything that Pittsburgh had wasn't as good, but right now they're not.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And again, the explosiveness of Taves and Kane sort of embodies right there better than anything else what you were talking about as far as Chicago having more offensive firepower and, being your choice to win this. I'm saying Boston in 6. You're giving the nod to Chicago. Do you have any sense on I'm guessing that you're figuring it's a longer series at the very least.
Yeah, I'm going to go 7. The reporter or me would love it to be Boston in 6 because I'd be there and I'd get to go on the ice and the Stanley Cup's near me and it's a great thing. But I still think Chicago in 7. Could Chicago do it in 6? Yeah, they could. They did it. You know, in Philly, I'm trying to think. Was that in 6 or 7? No, it wasn't 6. Yeah, in Philly it was
6.
In 6
yeah.
as well. So they could certainly do it in 6 again. It wouldn't shock me with either team winning, but I looked at it from a lot of different directions, and I think both teams are very similar. They really are. They can play rugged hockey. they could play finesse hockey. So, and that's why I had to start looking, you know, even deeper and saying, well, Chara does so much defensively, yet Keith does a lot defensively, but he's better offensively than Chara, right? We all know that. So is that
right.
a bigger plus? It might be because I don't know if you've noticed this, but the one thing I've noticed about Chara last couple of years is that on the power play, he is not the force that he used to be. For a guy with 105 or 7 mile an hour shot, their power play still stinks. So
yeah.
Keith clearly makes the Chicago power play better than Chara makes the Boston one.
Very good point. That's true. For all the advantages that Chara brings to the Bruins as a legitimate franchise defenseman, and again, hard to believe.
Oh, and we did see, not to interrupt you, but he did have that one play in the last game where he literally put his stick on the goal line, that mile and a half stick, and blocked a shot that nobody else could have blocked. So, you know, he does have that value.
Yes, he really does. And he, again, hard to believe he's only won one Norris Trophy through the course of his career. And that
he's not going to win this year. Did you see that the NHL is already having leaks?
Yes.
So PK Subban's going to win,
out
right?
there. Yeah. So it won't be this year. And again, he's not going to have too many more years of getting nominated at his age. But again, hard to believe he won't get at least one more when you look at, again, I mean, there are clearly some pretty good, franchise caliber defensemen at the top of the league, but a few that are clearly much better than Zdeno Chara, even at this stage, and probably even another year or two. So it'll be very, very interesting to see which of our predictions shakes out. I think we're both looking forward to what is going to be an awesome Stanley Cup final, Russ.
Yeah, I can't imagine this being a bad one. I can't imagine either team getting swept. I can't imagine it even going in five. So I'm expecting something great. I think no matter what, the atmosphere will be great. And I think at the end of the day, we as sports fans and reporters and everything else are looking and craving excitement, and I can't imagine we're not going to have that.
No, I think it is going to be absolutely awesome. In many, many different dimensions. So, absolutely. Rick Morris and Russ Cullen coming at you here. We've got for you the FDH Top 30 NHL rankings for the summer of 2013. Let me give a quick setup here as to what this is about. In our guide that we have that comes out every summer for the NHL entry draft, Pro Hockey Draftology 2013 in this case, we always have our top 30 list in there, and I have Russ do an analysis of it. We're spreading that to the show this year, and actually we do breakdowns of these in all four major sports, and we've already done our baseball segment. Steve Callis gave a somewhat approving, somewhat disapproving once over to my MLB list. I'm going to be doing the NBA one shortly with Ben Chu, but looking at the hockey one here, first, let's look at the guys that were off the top 30 from last year. A lot of guys dropping off of this. Jonathan Quick, 8th last year. Jason Spezza, 12th. Tim Thomas, 15th. Mike Smith, 16th. Pecorine, 17th. Marian Gaborik, 19th. Ilya Kovalchuk, 21st. Marian Hossa, 22nd. Shea Weber, 23rd. Alex Pietrangelo, 24th. Ryan Kessler, 28th. And a tie for 30th. This was not a gimmick, but I just couldn't find much to separate them. Brian Elliott and Yaroslav Halak. So all of those guys are dropping off of the list this year. Mm-hmm. It is, again, very, very hard to penetrate this list. Anybody off there that looks like an obvious oversight to you?
No, I think one that could really rebound maybe would be Ryan Kessler. But other than that, no. I mean, I felt like I could understand why that happened to the rest of those players. I mean, could I have missed one? Did you say it maybe faster? Maybe, but on the level, it seemed pretty right. Other than Kessler, who didn't rip it up when he came back this year, but I'm expecting good things from him next year.
Well, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned him, because you're taking a look at this, starting with the third tier, 28, 29, 30. Two of his teammates are on there, and they're well down from last year. Henrik Sedin, 28th. He was 9th last year. Zdeno Chara, 29th. He was 10th last year. Daniel Sedin, 30th. He was 11th last year. So your thoughts on the Sedins and Chara making up the third tier?
Well, I think just being in there is good enough. I think it does get awfully nitpicky when you're getting into the top 30 in the NHL. It's pretty rarefied air. So guys' careers fluctuate. Guys have years that fluctuate. This was a weird year. We're all going to admit that it was a bit of a fluky season. We are getting the cream of the crop now, but you could see where there were some things that happened in the regular season, in the playoffs, that might not have normally happened. But, you know, again, this was a weird year. So I think that's where you see this fluctuation, too, in the top 30.
Absolutely. And when you get into the second tier, there's a lot of guys that really kind of emerged, stepped up this year. In the case of two guys here who weren't on the list last year who rebounded. But the second tier, starting at 18, you start with a guy who emerged, although he had a tough playoff. Corey Schneider, 18th. He was not on the list last year. In terms of a rebound, Ryan Getzlaf, 19th, also not on the list last year. And you could say, I think, the same thing for Eric Staal, 20th off the list last year. 21st, an emergence one. This one may raise some eyebrows here, but Craig Anderson, just based on what a dominant season he had, cracking the list at 21st, and again, he wasn't on it last year. 22nd, you talk about taking a step up, one of these great young players, Taylor Hall, making the list for the first time. Phil Kessel, also making the list for the first time at 23. Anze Kopitar, 24. He was 27 last year. I thought he was more or less right about where he was. Nicholas Backstrom, 25. He was 20th last year. Jacob Voracek, 26th off the list last year. And then 27th, James Neal, 14th last year.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with any of those. I will say, though, that Eric Staal being off, that could be an oversight. He was more than a point a game this year. So I have a hard time thinking he wouldn't make it, but it is an awfully competitive list. I mean, a guy like Voracek, you know, had a career year. He did things that I sort of was expecting him to do pretty close after the draft, like maybe 4 or 5 years after the draft. Took him a little longer. I'm looking up his points now. He had, he was right at a, you know, just under a point a game, 46 and 48. So he was 46 and 48, and Staal was 53 and 48. So are we splitting hairs? Yeah, we could be. We could be.
Staal, again, a year ago at this time, I wasn't as impressed with him. That's why he didn't make the list then. But for him to rebound and make it a 20th this year, I was really impressed with how he stepped up. The top tier, this is
a
little bit
longer. Wait, so Staal is in the 20? Or I thought he was
I have him at 20. He was off the list last year.
I misunderstood. Okay, I thought you said he was off
this year.
Yeah,
I have him bouncing
back.
No,
that makes sense.
Bouncing back onto the list, yeah. So you and I,
okay, that
doesn't surprise
sense.
Me. You and I are in concurrence on that, yeah. I thought he was a bounce back kind of similar to Getzlaf at 19. As opposed to guys who are making this list for the first time. The top tier, this is a little bit wider than we've had it maybe some years in the past, but I think this is what makes it very interesting. And the names at the top are kind of predictable, if not the order necessarily, but as you start stretching into the teens, I think that's where it really gets interesting. I'll count these ones up to number one this time. At 17, Jimmy Howard, I had him 25th a year ago, and definitely gave him a bump because of the playoffs. I initially had him in the 20s, but the way that he stood on his head and carried my Red Wings, I thought merited that. Maybe a little bit of the same at 16, Henrik Zetterberg. I got him right in there. He was off the list last year. 15th, talk about emergence of a great young defenseman, P.K. Subban. He was not on the list last year.
He's winning the Norris Trophy, so
yeah. Yeah, that really says a lot about him right there. Chris Kunitz, 14th. He was off the list a year ago. Chris Letang, 13th. I had him 13th a year ago on the list. In 12th place, down from 5th last year, Claude Giroux. A little bit of a give back this year in terms of his play.
Yeah.
But
Giroux was still solid, though, Yeah,
I don't expect it to be a long-term thing. Guy that made a big jump up here, 29th a year ago, 11th right now, Martin St. Louis.
He had an amazing year.
And if you're going back to, like, the start of the millennium, I don't know if there's, you know, two or even three forwards who have played better than he has. 10th place, down from 7th a year ago, Erik Karlsson, bouncing back very strong in the playoffs after a superhuman recovery.
same season, Achilles recovery is unheard of.
Yeah, he took a skate through it. He partially severed because of a skate.
Yeah, it wasn't fully severed, but they said 75%. But still, I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, that's 75% more than I would want, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm like, let's get back to St. Louis for just a minute, because this is a guy that couldn't even make it into the league for a while, and then when things changed, he was able to make it into the league. He had 60 points in 48 games. I mean, it's incredible production, yet he was still hitting people. He was still blocking shots. He was winning faceoffs. He had two game-winning goals. Like, he had 17 power play assists in 48 games. That's a hell of a lot. Now, I understand he has Steve Stamkos on that power play, but you can make the argument he's making Stamkos better too.
I think so, and when you look at his prior track record as well in Tampa Bay, I think he's one of these guys who, again, a lock first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he is now,
I do too.
There may always be a gulf between how great his career was and how much people realize that it was great. I just get that sense with him that the people realize what an all-time great this guy has been, particularly you know, how much of it was in an era of clamp-down defense and clutching and grabbing and, you know.
I don't know.
I
agree with you. I think that he might be taken for granted a little too much. He's got 912 points in 979 games, so I don't know if he'll be a first ballot guy, because I know they like the point-of-game guys. He's not going to get 500 goals. He's got 340. Still a real respectable number. It's not like I'm you know, saying that it's bad. And we know what he's done playoff-wise and everything else. So I feel pretty confident he's going to make it. I don't know if he'll be first ballot, though.
Interesting. And if it's not first ballot, that might just reinforce my point all the more so. Again, at the pace he's going, he's going to chalk up some more goals as well. But
he's a 75, so that would make him 35.
He's up
like
there.
39 or something?
38 at some point.
So, what's he going to get? Let's give him two more years, 20 goals each. So that's 40 more goals, so that's 380. I can't see him doing any more than that. He only had 17. Well, he had 17 in 48 games. So I shouldn't say only 17. So we'll give him the 400 goals, another 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a reasonable thing, because 2 years maybe of, like, at the same level, and then, you know, if he's content to kind of, you know, hang on in a somewhat lesser role, you know, at it at a slower pace than that. He's a guy that really loves the game a lot. In ninth position on the list, I believe this is the first time he's I think he was on the list 2 years ago. He was off the list last year, Patrick Kane, rebounding from a
big
year ago.
Big rebound year for him, yeah.
Really, really, really huge. Yeah, that was tremendous on his part. Eighth place, up from 18th a year ago. Pavel Datsyuk, you said when we were doing the playoff breakdown, might have been the best player in the playoffs through the first two rounds this year, Russ.
Yep. Yeah, no question. I mean, if I look up Pavel Datsyuk's numbers, which I am doing now, I'm trying to find his playoff numbers. Let's see. Regular season, 49 points, so he was more than a point a game regular season. His usual plus 21. I mean, it doesn't matter who's on that team, he's always going to be a plus. He 8 power play goals, 6 game winners. I mean, 6 game winners is pretty impressive. It looks to me like he had 9 playoff points, but he might have had more. I'm trying to get that. So I don't know what this guy doesn't do. We know he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's little guessing about that, and I will go one step further. Playoff-wise, he had 9 points in 14 games. I will go one step further and tell you, and again, he's not even a point a game, but because of his defensive prowess, it doesn't matter. He's close enough, 767 in 779 games. I mean, he hasn't even played that many games, if you think about it, because of, you know, because by the time he broke into the league, he was a little bit of an older guy.
He's a Selke winner. Oh, yeah, he's been a Selke winner. That backs up what you said about his defense.
1, 2, 3 Selkies. 1, 2, 3, 4 Lady Bings. He might win another Bing this year. So I will go out on the limb and say he is the greatest Russian hockey player ever. I you know, I don't have a problem doing that all around. Now, Pavel Bure was the greatest scoring Russian hockey player ever, but your best all-around Russian hockey player, that's the guy.
Wow. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but off the top of my head, it sounds like you're probably right. And in terms of playoffs, he has come a long way since I, in my bitterness around the middle of last decade, would take to calling him Pavel the Friendly Ghost every spring, because that was not a strong part of his game for a couple of years there. But
he's starting to rack it up. I mean, he's got 103 points in 140 games, and if you look at his last four or five series, it's gotten a lot better.
Absolutely. Seventh position on the list, Jonathan Toews. He was 26th a year ago. A bounce back, I think, much like we saw from Kane.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a change in the entire team, so that certainly was going to change him. It's not like his last year was bad, 57 points in 59 games, because he had a little bit of injury. That's not a bad year, 29 goals. This year, 48 points in 47 games, 23 goals, 9 points in the playoffs. The thing about Toews, and I've covered him for a long time as well through World Juniors, and I've seen him in a lot of different – I've pretty much watched him grow up. He is a guy who I always felt had a high ceiling, and I think he's going beyond what I thought he would do. Like right now, he's at 372 points in 408 games, and I could envision another 7, 8, 10 years. He's only 25, so you figure probably another 10 years, maybe even more, but we'll go 10 conservatively. If he goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So he's had 7 years. If we give him another 7 years, you know, he's going to be at the 800-point mark if he keeps up this same pace, which he's been pretty rock solid with. And actually, this year's 23 goals in 47 games would have been more like 45 goals in a regular season. So his goals were way up. He's only got 167 goals so far career. So I don't know if he'll get 500, but – I think he's another guy that'll go in that 350-400 range. So, you know, we are looking. I wrote something the other day for teams that why aren't there dynasties? Why, you know, why is it hard? And we know because of the salary cap and everything else. And I think we're looking at teams now that if they're great teams like the Penguins, like the Red Wings, like the Hawks, and like the Bruins, you're looking at 2 to 3 Hall of Famers on those teams.
Right.
When you went back and you looked at the Islanders, I think it was the Islanders, I counted 5, and the Oilers had 6.
Right.
You're not going to have that anymore. It's just not possible.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
It's just not possible.
In our about two minutes remaining here, I'm going to go 6 through 1 and get your thoughts.
Yeah.
Your boy, Henrik Lundqvist, 6th place. John Tavares, not on the list a year ago, but 5th this time around. Evgeny Malkin, 4th. Alex Ovechkin, 3rd, Steven Stamkos, 2nd, and proving, based on how I feel about him personally, that I am objective, Sidney Crosby repeating in the number one spot. This is where it really gets tough to sorting out the best of the best here in the 1 through 6, Russ.
It does. If you ever want to say Crosby stinks or Crosby sucks or whatever, he had a bad last round of the playoffs, conference finals. He's still more than a point a game for these playoffs. He's still 15 points in 14 games. I mean, we're looking at a generational player here. He's got 665 points in 470 games. I feel like if his career were cut short by injury, he's still a Hall of Famer right now.
Sure.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know what else he needs to accomplish, because the Hall of Fame isn't just the NHL anyhow, so he's got a gold medal. I think he has a Memorial Cup win. He's got Stanley Cup wins. There's really nothing he hasn't done. And this year, he only played 36 games, but had 56 points.
That's true. So you agree with him, 1, over Stamkos, 2? Okay.
I do. And Stamkos, can we even say he slipped a little? I mean, his team wasn't very good. His team certainly could have been better. He had 57 points, but he had 29 goals. That 29 goals in 48 games wouldn't have been 60, but it would have been probably 50. I mean, he is the best goal scorer in the league. So I think it's good. I think what you did with Lundqvist was right, because I think at the end of the day, he certainly has proved that maybe his regular season numbers won't get him a Vezina. I think Bob is going to get that, Sergei Bobrovsky. But I think he'll be 2nd. But he's right there. So I think and going into next year, it's fair to say Lundqvist has been playing like a Vezina candidate every year for the last three or four. So I like it. I mean, I do like the list. Tavares, I think it's in the right spot, and I think next year he'll be even higher. I think he's clawing up to that top, even though the Islanders are still not even a playoff team. But I voted for